Revenue Committee will come to order. Today, for our information meeting, we have one of the state constitutional officers with us. Thank you, Treasurer Randall Edwards. We appreciate your coming today. And with him, Laura Lockwood McCall, who is the debt manager. And we know you have some preliminary things to talk about, and then we'll get on to the details. So,
great.
Mr. Treasurer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, members, I'm Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon. Thought she was talking to me. I just wanted to just give you a couple of points and then let Laura walk you through a presentation. She made a similar presentation to Ways and Means, or a number of subcommittees there, so maybe a couple of you have heard this. But what's important for you to take away from today's meeting is a better understanding of what is the bond program of the state of Oregon, your role, my role, what's the purpose of it. And basically, you should be very proud that this is an organization that, and in particular, Laura and her shop does a great job for the state of Oregon. And so what I want to do is just hit on a couple of points. Oregon really has a long history of being seen as a prudent manager of money. And again, a lot of times we focus on the investment side, a very important piece. But the sale of bonds is equally important, and one that's a tool, an important financial tool for you to improve the state of Oregon. And I say that because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what we're talking about when we talk about a bond. A bond, as you will hear, is basically an IOU, if you will, that the state says they will pledge to pay back this IOU over time with interest. And the advantage for you and the advantage for the state is, in doing so, we get money up front that meets the needs of the state today and into the future. We cost share that expense. So when you build a building or a road that has a long life asset, you're spreading that cost over a variety of payers. So it's not just one generation. It's a multiple tax generation that helps pay for that. And it makes a lot of sense. So one thing we always try to say is don't issue debt for operational expenses. That is your daily expenses, but look at it as infrastructure and things that have a long life, because in the end, that's what the markets want. That's the most prudent way to manage these assets, and in the end, it will also help the state of Oregon. This is an area, too, that's very, very sophisticated, and Laura will show you the marketplace in which we operate. The municipal bond market is over $2 trillion. That's where we sell our bonds. But when you look at the entire cap of the debt market, it's multiple billions, and you'll see that. But here, too, the municipal marketplace is one that it has grown in sophistication and in size. Oregon has been able to play in that marketplace very successfully. And in part because we have a very well-run shop, and we've got a great reputation in the marketplace. My role in this is pretty simple in some ways. My role is to make sure that when we get to the market that we maximize the amount of money that we're trying to achieve. So therefore, bottom line is I'm trying to keep the cost of the sale down as much as I can so that the money that we borrow, if you will, is the most that we have so that we can make sure we're meeting the needs of Oregon. So how do I do that? Well, first and foremost, I am the coordinator of all the sale of bonds in the state of Oregon. So when agencies go out to sale, they work through my office, and we work in with the underwriters to make sure that we're in the marketplace at a good time. We have a calendar, we manage that so that we're not stumbling over ourselves vis-a-vis the different agencies. So we maximize that. We also work with local governments in that capacity as well to try to make sure we're helping time the marketplace as best as we can. I'm the protector of the state's credit rating, and you probably have heard a lot about that, and we can delve into that later. But again, that's the market's viewpoint of the risk inherent in the IOUs that we sell in the marketplace. We also look at opportunities to refund the debts that we have, and so therefore try to shore up where we can when interest rates are favorable to either give you back the money or refinance in a way that lowers the cost of those sales that we've had in the past. And lastly, I would say the bond portion of my organization, we also look to innovate. We try to find new opportunities to take this tool to better Oregon's position financially. And I can give you one great example that you were involved in and the voters of Oregon, and that was a pension obligation bond to try to bring down the cost of the pension system. That has been hugely successful as a way in which we help reduce the cost of the pension system here in Oregon. So with that, I want to say this is I want to give Laura and her shop a great deal of credit. She's been with us for over 2 years now. I'm really proud of what the work that she does and her organization. They do a great job for you and for me. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Laura.
Thank you very much. I'd also like, through the chair and to the committee, to thank the debt managers that work in a lot of state agencies because it's really a partnership. Buried in housing and transportation and higher ed, there's a number of people who are very dedicated who work hand-in-hand with us to try and do that very thing, which is to borrow as cheaply as possible. So I'm not sure how many of you were at the presentations we did a week and a half ago, so I don't want to bore you to tears, but I will try and go through it relatively quickly, and please, I would ask you to stop if you have questions. I'm going to cover the various topics that you see listed, and I'm assuming we have handouts for the committee. If not, definitely we'll make sure you get those. I'm going to cover some definitions.
And while you're proceeding, go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
I am so sorry, sir.
Thank you.
Laura Lockwood McCall, Director of Debt Management in the Office of State Treasurer. I know at least one person who I saw a few weeks ago. Definitions of what municipal bonds are. I'll talk briefly, as Randall's touched on, the debt markets. Dear, you have nothing to... There's no screen? I'm very sorry.
Well, we have some experts.
There's some technicians here.
Who will figure it out.
That would be snappy graphics. It would be a shame.
Yeah, we know about snappy graphics. We're expert on snappy graphics. Sound? Do you have sound effects? Because we're used to sound effects.
No, I'm afraid my voice is all you get.
There we go.
But now I don't see it.
There we go.
Okay, and we'll talk a bit about credit ratings and some of the backdrop as far as how rating agencies go about determining our credit rating here in Oregon. Or briefly on our bonding process, some long-term debt trends for the last 20 years as far as Oregon's outstanding indebtedness, debt capacity recommendations that will be forthcoming in a State Debt Policy Advisory Commission report, and then finally comparing our debt ratios to other states in terms of what these long-term trends mean. I got to get rid of that little X. Pardon me. I'm so sorry.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. So as Randall has said, really a bond issue is really the process of borrowing money. Just like when we borrow for car loans and mortgages, these are sort of things that we can't afford to just pay with cash generally. They're a fairly large dollar amount. And so we need to find investors who are interested in loaning us money. A bond is literally a certificate that represents our promise to repay. We have specified schedules of principal and interest, and you'll see in a lot of the state budgets, if you're on a Ways and Means Committee, that it's loaded in existing debt services in each of the state agencies' budgets. This next slide just shows you how big the municipal market is relative to all the different credit markets in the United States. We're about 9% of the overall total. It's a huge, vast market with thousands and thousands of small issuers, some larger issuers like ourselves, but it's made up of school districts, cities, counties, water districts, power facilities, you name it, everyone who can issue tax-exempt securities. Randall's pretty much covered why we do it, so I think I'll just skip past it just again to emphasize that we're spreading the cost of a facility over time to those who get to use the facilities. Because our interest on Oregon bonds are exempt from federal taxation, the interest is also exempt from state taxation. When we sell our bonds, we find that investors are willing to give us significantly lower interest costs than you would get if you were a homeowner going. So, for example, we're pricing a bond issue today for lottery bonds. It's a 20-year transaction. The all-in cost of funds will be well below 5%. It's pretty hard to beat that compared to a mortgage. So that's one of the big benefits of tax exemption for both state and local governments as we go and borrow in the long-term markets. types of bonds that are financed include correctional facilities, the state, transportation improvements, higher education and community colleges. You'll see all of those in the proposed bonding bills that have been submitted to the legislature. But we also do a variety of other things that are self-supporting, including economic and rural development throughout the state, single and multifamily housing projects, veterans home loans, small-scale energy loans, and drinking water and water pollution control. Credit ratings. As Randall has mentioned, there's a degree of risk, and it's a perceived degree of risk. So similarly, when you go to get a mortgage or a car loan, someone gives you a credit score. It's a number. But in our case, we get a letter, we get a rating. There's three firms, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch Investor Service, who rate our bonds. And typically, the AAA is considered the very highest rating. To give you an example, the city of Portland is a AAA, believe it or not. I'm trying to think of a good state in this part of the country. I believe Utah, which is where I was last week, is a AAA. Now, if you're an AA or A or B, you're still a good credit rating. You've got to understand that the municipal default rate of a community that doesn't pay its debt is less than 1%. So it's very fine degrees and variations between the different credit levels. But that does really translate into a change and a difference in interest rates depending on your credit rating, just like it would be with the homeowner or the person buying a car over time. If you drop below triple B minus, you're no longer considered investment grade. And, of course, as I said, it affects your interest rates and the cost of our borrowing. What do they look at? Well, for general obligation bonds, they're looking at our financial performance, so they're reviewing how we do with our budget, whether our fund balances come in where we say they will, and they look at our annual financials. They also care quite a bit about the governance framework and the management practices of the jurisdiction that they're ranking. So we'll spend a lot of time talking with them about our constitution, our revenue sources, our kicker in our case. We'll also talk about specific accounting, financial budget controls, and some of the work that you all do to periodically review the budget throughout the budget cycle. They look at our debt burden. They're looking at us and they're comparing us to other jurisdictions of similar nature in terms of how much debt we have. Again, just like the homeowner, they want to make sure that you don't have too much debt on the books in terms of being able to handle changes in economic fortunes. And finally, they look at the economic base. And they probably don't weight this as much as they weight some of the other factors, but it does really matter. They do have to make some perceived judgments about the state of your economy and the long-term health of the economy of the jurisdiction in terms of being able to provide the revenues needed to repay the debt. If it's a revenue bond, they look at all the same factors, but they also take a look at the specific revenue streams. So, for example, we sell bonds for ODOT. We've done a series of bonds for the OTA 3 program using highway user tax fees, and at least one rating agency has rated that as a AAA for our senior lien. And the reason is they look at the use of the revenues, the steady stream coming in, and they make an evaluation based on how much debt we have relative to the revenue stream. We also recently upgraded to AAA by Standard & Poor's for our lottery revenue bonds. For a very similar reason, they saw a long-term trend of steady, healthy growth, good cycles and bad, relative to the amount of debt we have outstanding. They look at, obviously, the legal and the financial agreements underlying a specific transaction and our rate covenants. In the case of lottery bonds, we have a rate covenant of 4x coverage, which means for every dollar that we have in debt service, we have to have $4 of revenue. Currently, our coverage is over 6x for the lottery, maybe even higher. This is a snapshot, and it's frankly out of date already, I apologize, of where we were relative to our other 49 states and the District of Columbia back in November. Subsequent to this presentation, I think Montana just got announced as positive outlook. Hawaii just got upgraded this morning. But what you see in general is that Oregon is in a tier AA minus. Again, I want to emphasize that's not a bad credit rating. It's just that some of the other states around the country have deeper reserves and have certain situations where they are perceived as being a slightly better credit than Oregon. And there's some that are lower than us. This is a quick chart that shows you sort of historically the three rating agencies and over the last 15, 16 years how we have fared. What you'll note is that they don't always agree, and sometimes you have a higher or lower credit rating depending on the agency. They may emphasize different aspects of your overall credit, but in general, All three rating agencies felt that in 2003 that the state was not at the same credit quality that it had once been at during the height of the revenue problems that we were having. Fitch overreacted and downgraded the state two notches and came back in April of 2005 and brought us back into the AA minus category, so you can sort of see that's where we stand today. Feedback. Just got off 2 days' worth of conference calls with the rating agencies for a number of bond issues. And so these are sort of a summary of the things that they would say in general about us as they review our credit. They think we have very strong financial controls. And by that, I incorporate accounting, budget, cash flow management, and the like. We have a conservative consensus-based revenue forecasting process. That's not true in all 50 states. There's sometimes dueling forecasts between the legislature, the governor's office, and others. And they like the fact that we work together and come up with a single recommendation. The constitutional balanced budget amendment can't be emphasized enough. That's a very important consideration, and it links to the next one, which is that the legislature, despite how difficult it was in 2003 to come back into special session on five occasions to keep on balancing the budget, did do that. That wasn't true necessarily in other states, particularly states with lower credit ratings than we have currently. As painful as it is to have to adjust, the fact that the state has been willing to do that is a very strong positive point. I think we have sound debt management and capital planning policies, and we'll talk about those in a moment. Obviously, a growing economic base with diversification. The more diversification, the better, whether it be revenues or economy. And finally, the Educational Stability Fund, which was established a few years back, now is starting to develop enough money in it that we actually promoted it this morning on our calls, and it's growing. It's estimated to be in a couple hundred million by the end of the fiscal year, I believe. And the next biennium, if all's good, will be about over $400 million. That's a very, very positive thing. Unfortunately, now here's some of the weaknesses, which keeps us in that AA-minus category. Oh, I do want to mention comprehensive pension reform, as Randall said, that is considered a very positive factor. In the coming days and weeks and months and years, you'll be reading about retiree health care problems in other states, and they're in the multi-billion dollar range, and it's probably will outstrip anything you thought were shortcomings in pension, not just in this state but elsewhere. And states that have much higher credit ratings than us are going to be facing some serious issues as they start grappling with those issues. The fact that we don't have as nearly as large is definitely a credit positive. Now the weaknesses. Low budget reserves. That's singly the most repeated line that we hear when we talk with them, meet with them, you know, try and cajole them into giving us an upgrade, is they would like to see us to have levels that are more equivalent to what many other states have been able to achieve. Coupled with that is some uncertainty that's linked to voter initiative activity. Not so much that we have voter initiative activity, but because of the fiscal impacts that often result from these different activities and how we manage that. We talk about our strong financial controls and the fact that the legislature meets periodically to manage, and that helps, but nevertheless, that's just something that they'll always write about in their presentations to investors. They have noted and observed that the 2% kicker law makes it difficult for us to build this adequate budgetary reserve that they'd like to see. They are also concerned about our heavy reliance on a single cyclical tax, such as income tax. In general, rating agencies like more diversity and more balance, if possible. They acknowledge that we have a moderate but growing debt burden as we address our most critical state capital infrastructure needs. We did use deficit financing one time in 2003 to help balance the state's budget with appropriation deficit bonds. That is a factor that works against us, but it sort of moves away over time. Those bonds will be paid off in 2014, and they kind of hold it against you for about 3 years, is what I've been told, before they don't count it quite as heavily. And obviously, if we don't reuse those types of techniques, then over time, then that will sort of drop towards the bottom as far as being considered a weakness. Bond authorization issuance process, the chart shows you a very high-level summary of the work that goes on. The State Debt Policy Advisory Commission does forecasts of debt capacity. We take the revenue forecasts that are produced. We add to that the existing debt service for the state's debt. And then we forecast out, based on long-term interest rates, how much additional capacity the state would have if we stayed within prudent debt limits. The governor builds based on that forecast, their budget and bonding proposals, which the legislature now is having an opportunity to review and determine what the levels will be. Then, as Randall has said, we take the authorization once the legislature is completed, and then over the course of the next 2 years, we actually sell the bonds for the different programs and projects that have been approved. The four types of debt. General obligation bonds requires voter approval with a constitutional amendment, because actually in our state constitution, there's a $50,000 limit on debt, except if you get a voter authorization. So there's a number of letters, 11G and F and H and a lot of other letters I can't remember, but basically if you have this voter authorization, you get to pledge the full faith and credit of the state. It may be general fund supported or it might not be. We have a number of programs that are self-supporting, but they get that double barrel benefit of having the state underlying credit. And in general, the debt limits in the Constitution far exceed what is really a realistic or prudent debt limit for any of our general obligation bonds, which is why we use the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission process to help us set more realistic budget targets. There are also a number of different direct revenue bond programs that have been created by the legislature through statute. They're not secured by the state's unconditional pledge to pay, but rather they must be paid through the program revenues of the different types of programs. We'll talk about those a little bit more in a moment. There's also the appropriation credits. I mentioned deficit bonds. We also use certificates of participation to lease, purchase a number of real property and personal property, particularly in the area of correctional facilities, and also state office buildings equipment. And they're generally payable through state agencies from general fund resources. Finally, we have conduit revenue bonds, which we are offering basically the tax exemption for certain economic development and housing purposes, nonprofits. There's no obligation on the part of the state to pay, no general fund, no other state support, and they stand alone. And so we have a number of those bond programs as well in the state. This just chart, again, we'll get you the handout, just gives you a sample for why I suggested that the debt limits in the Constitution are way higher than what we actually have. For example, higher ed, we have a $2.7 billion constitutional debt limit. And as of 6/30/06, we had $196 million outstanding in this type of debt. And the rest just shows you some statutory sites, just two different bond programs. This is a quick snapshot of all the state's debt. What you'll see is back in the 1980s, the big blue line was general obligation bonds, and almost all of that was veterans' mortgage loans. And very little was direct revenue, the red, and appropriation credits hadn't even really been invented, I guess, at that point. As you move forward, as the veterans' debt was being paid down, you see all the way through about 2000 that the state's overall debt levels were just dropping. Even as the red was growing, these revenue programs were growing, there wasn't a lot of other debt. You get to the early 2000s, and we started building a lot of state prisons and correctional facilities, as well as really the cost of housing went up. So even as housing bonds were being issued and ODOT bonds were being issued, that's where the red starts really growing. That's pretty much what it says. And the big other jump is in 2000 and between 2003 and 2004 was when the state sold pension obligation bonds to lower the cost of our pension system. So those are the pieces of it. And we will continue to see higher numbers as the rest of the OTIA 3 bond program unfolds over the next several fiscal years. We are issuing in roughly $300 million a year chunks, and we have about $1.4 billion remaining. So I would suggest that probably at least through the next 3 or 4 years, the numbers will start growing until they start leveling off in the overall level. And this next few charts just really shows you in more depth what I've just stated. So you see the DVA bonds dropping, other GO debt growing slightly, and then the pension obligation bonds coming in 2004. As far as revenue bonds, this has really been a growing story in the state. And the blue at the bottom shows you both single-family and multifamily mortgage bonds. The red is the growing use of lottery bonds to fund economic development, educational programs, projects. And highway user bonds are the yellow. So that's the big growing part, I think, of our state debt portfolio. And also then you can see the big jump up. I don't know if you can see that what year it is, but 1995, 1996, and then up. That was really actually after Measure 11, I believe, passed, and the state started building quite a number of correctional facilities. And the red appropriation bonds, which will go away in a couple of years. So, SDPAC, what do they look at? Well, they have set some goals as far as maximums. The goal being...
I'm sorry. Could you unpack the acronym for us?
Yes, excuse me, sir. Representative Barnhart, State Debt Policy Advisory Commission.
Thank you.
Your esteemed vice chair happens to be a member of that commission. And that is made up of two legislators, one from the Senate, one from the House. State Treasurer is the chair, the director of DAS, and a public member. And we meet once a year. We're hopefully going to meet fairly shortly. And we do a forecast, which we provide to the governor and the legislature as to debt capacity. So the underlying models that develop it, as I mentioned, is we'd like to keep general fund debt service no greater than 5% of the general fund's overall revenues. So everything is geared off of the revenue forecast. As of 6/30/06, our current debt ratio for this particular area was 3.7%. Based on that, and this is not saying that you should issue that, but based on that, the preliminary numbers would indicate that for the 07-09 biennium, if you were to issue everything you needed to get to a 5% number, it's $847 million. It drops off, obviously, for the next biennium quite precipitously, so when the recommendations come out, it'll be a slightly lower number because the goal is to try and keep a sustainable level of debt and not issue all your debt right away, because if your revenue forecast falls off, you don't want to be in a position that you can't take care of your highest capital needs. For lottery bonds, we also do a forecast. We, again, look at the long-term forecast for lottery revenues. The indenture requires 4x coverage, as I mentioned. So we were at 7.4x coverage at 6/30/06, which would indicate that for the next biennium, the maximum again, which is not what we're recommending, but the maximum amount you could issue and stay below the 4x coverage would be $1 billion. There is also something called net tax-supported debt, and that's the way that the rating agencies try and figure out how we're alike or different than our other states. And what they do is they say, every state's got a different way to keep their transportation money and their this money and that. So they say, what's any kind of debt you have that's supported by taxes? And they total all that up, and they total up every other state, and then they basically look at population so they can get debt per capita, and then they look at personal income so they can say debt as a percentage of personal income. Again, it's debt, not debt service. Subtle difference, but it's just a way to kind of compare and see where you stand. I'll show you those statistics in a moment. And lastly, there's non-tax-supported debt I mentioned, which is really standalone, self-managed. So it's all based on revenues and rate covenants and things like that. So this picture shows you all the things that are considered general fund-supported debt. And it's not all of our pension debt. It's about 38%, because that's the portion the general fund roughly supports of the debt service for pension obligation bonds. And it's all these other things we've mentioned. Currently, as of the end of the last fiscal year, we had $2.64 billion in outstanding general fund-supported debt. The net tax-supported debt I mentioned, the things in blue show you, now they've put 100% of our pension obligation bonds in the picture. They've added all the highway user tax bonds and the lottery revenue bonds. And as of 12/31/06, we were at $5.4 billion. So you can see the scale difference between the two. Again, I'll get you a handout. These are just the numbers that underlie the different types of bond issues and which category they go in. But this is really the snapshot. So this is a 10-year trend in terms of our net tax-supported debt per capita versus the median among the 50 states. The blue bar shows you what the median's been, and it's been going up slightly with the cost of inflation, and just in general, states have been putting money into infrastructure. So you can see that as of 2006, I believe it's about $754 per capita. The light blue was what ours was, and then the white shows you with the addition of pension obligation bonds. We like to show it with and without, because not every state chose to sell pension obligation bonds, and so it kind of swamps the results. But what you see is that we're about at the median if you don't include the pension obligation bonds right now. And that number is expected to go up, as I said, because of the additional issuance of debt for ODOT and OTIA. This is the same snapshot, but now we're just looking at personal income. Again, we're slightly above the median, which is at 2.5%, and I think we're just over that, maybe about 2.6%. This is my presentation. I think we're well managed from a debt perspective. We have significant capacity. The rating agencies noted that, and they appreciate the fact that we have good prioritization planning, that we go through a process to determine which capital projects we're going to do. It's not just everything under the sun. We talked about community colleges on the phone this morning because we're about to sell some. They like the fact that we have a prioritization scheme, and I think that's just it's kudos to all the people in the legislature who make sure that's the way we do it. And finally, as I've mentioned, our debt will continue to grow. I will say in conclusion that as we build our budget reserves, we will see higher credit ratings. It's probably the fulcrum point for the credit analysis at this point. And so with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. We have plenty of time this afternoon to ask questions. These are the experts on borrowing money and sustaining our long-term situation, so let's have at it. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Laura, I thank you very much. Excellent presentation, Mr. Treasurer. You've honored us by coming today, and thank you, Laura. Laura, I guess I'm surprised that we get a AAA on lottery while we're at a AA plus on GO.
AA minus.
I'm sorry. Can you give me some of the logic behind that? Because the full faith and credit of the state of Oregon behind our GOs versus the gaming, and I appreciate the fact that gaming has gone up, but we've had Mr. Penn in, and he's shown us that with new games it goes up and it stays up for a while, and then pretty soon that becomes old hat and they have to come up with some more. So I'm anxious about the lottery. I know, probably shouldn't whisper this too far on Wall Street. I'm grateful for the AAA.
Well, through the chair, Representative Butler, I should say that Standard & Poor's changed their rating criteria for revenue bonds in general. And when they did that change, they upgraded hundreds of credits around the United States because they took a different look at how they look at revenue bonds versus general obligation bonds. They were looking at the revenue streams, and they were looking at the Paul's going to hit me, but I think it's called when a particular revenue stream is not particularly subject to change based on inelasticity of demand, I believe they call it. And they looked at a lot of sales tax revenue streams, highway user tax, gas tax, and that's what started it. And I think 400 credits got upgraded around the states. And believe me, it wasn't like Moody's and Fitch did it, but it was like a shot you heard around the United States, at least. And I was on a conference call learning more about it because it was great. We were really happy that ODOT got AAA. And I said, well, what about those lottery bonds? So they said, well, we'll get back to you. And believe me, sir, we were at an A-plus credit, and we got a four-notch upgrade from them. We were upgraded from an A1 to a AA3 by Moody's about 2 weeks ago as well. Fitch still has us as an A+. So I would suggest to you that I just read the report that they wrote this morning. The verdict is still out. It just depends on whether you think that the S&P methodology or Moody's. But I think in general, the other two states that issue lottery bonds also got moved up much higher, not to necessarily AAA. So it was a freebie on their part that they got an upgrade. What they looked at, in a nutshell, at least in the case of Standard & Poor's, was that during the height of the recession, when Oregon's revenues dropped by 25%, lottery revenues didn't drop off. They went up. So that's what I meant by inelasticity. It seemed to be somewhat immune from other economic trends. I don't know that we can say across the board. I would suggest that we think, and I'm going to let the state treasurer add to this, that I think we're underrated right now as far as our general obligation bond. We go back and we make that point over and over again to them. So do you want to add to that?
I concur. I'm when you look, when we got downgraded, excuse me, the situation we are in today is as healthy, if not more healthy, than it was before. We never had a rainy day fund of any kind. We have one now, and it's growing. So, and even though our debt issuances have gone up, we're still in a very good comfort zone with them. So, and that pension obligation, some states have also issued that, and we can talk about the mechanics of that, but in essence, it was a play between the cost of borrowing the money versus a fixed cost within the pension system that state agencies were going to have to pay anyway to the system. We got it cheaper, and since we've done that, we've actually had double-digit returns on that money. So that difference has been a great saving to the state in the sense of the pension system. But the point is the rating agencies don't necessarily, they see a lot of states having issued pension obligation bonds and some that haven't. When we first started this process, they were pretty agnostic about it. They're getting more interested in liabilities, pension and the health care in particular. There was a disclosure requirement that now states have to disclose this liability on the health care side. And as Laura was saying, it's the number's astronomical. And fortunately for Oregon, we're not going to be a problem in this sense. So, therefore, I'd say our credit's even going to look better to the marketplace.
If I may add, when the state did do a pension obligation bond, we got a corporate equivalent rating from Moody's because we were trying to sell them to investors in Europe. And they didn't really understand the municipal credit rating, so we went and got one of those. We were AAA. So in subsequent years, the rating agency has been trying to explain, how can you be a AAA here and be a AA minus? As I said, these are fine gradations. But nevertheless, I'm happy that we have a AAA for lottery, and we were able to actually lower the cost of bond insurance because of that, because of these two upgrades. So we're saving money, even if you, whether you believe in the system or not, because the cost of our borrowing will just continue to go down.
I'm interested in the list of strengths and weaknesses, and notice that where our highest weakness used to be, the first item that always came about was the lack of a true reserve, any kind of a rainy day fund. Second was the initiative process, Oregon's very accessible initiative process by the voters. And of course, when you see the costs increase, the amount of debt issuance that we've got total, including the COPs and other revenue bonds, you'll see that a lot of that is voter-driven at the voting polls. I'm interested, though, that today the number one weakness that you've mentioned, Laura, is that of low budget reserves. And isn't that somehow connected to what we do in the legislative process relative to our Ways and Means, that's not us, it's the folks down the other end of the building, by holding something back and not spending right down to the last farthing, if you will, isn't that what low budget reserves is about, or am I misreading that?
Through the chair. A different version of the same question was asked to me a few weeks ago, and to be diplomatic, the rating agencies won't tell you whether to do it that way or to eliminate a kicker, or really what they just look at is it's the governance structure, which is however you get there, whatever you call it, they want to see at the end of the day that you have a savings account. And it's really no different than if you have a mortgagee, which is they want you to have a good balance between, you know, savings and your operating budget and all. So if I could leave it at that, they really are neutral as to how we get there. They just want us to have a good plan and then stick to it.
Maybe I'll add to that. I mean, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I get asked all the time now, so how big should the rainy day fund be? And there is no magic number. From the rating purposes, which could be different from your purposes, 5% is fine. That's what they'd like to see. They'd like to see that in all states. I've asked them that point blank, and hence we have the stability fund that's at 5%. We're not there, by the way. There's a lot of talk about filling another bucket, which I will say would help us. I mean, it doesn't. The point is 5% should be seen as a floor, and then it's a policy call of how much do you want to put and how do you put that money aside and where do you get the money becomes when you get over that. But I would say, and to your point, Representative Butler, ending balances should be part of that discussion. It is not only putting money aside for those changes, but also making sure we do have something at the end when you start the next budget. And it had been a problem. And hence, we came to you a few years ago and asked for some authority to help manage our cash imbalance and with a tool called a tax anticipation note. It's worked really well. Don't take this as a negative, but we, the state, kept taking our budget to the very edge and starting the next budget cycle with, you know, a need to have some cash. So that would help.
Representative Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard you talk about the fine gradations between the different ratings, and I understand this is a market and there are lots of different conditions that can affect any particular bond sale, but could you give me sort of a sense of scale if we do get a better rating, how much that might save us or those sorts of things?
Through the chair, thank you, because I think last week or two I was asked that question and I didn't have a spreadsheet in front of me and I may have overstated. But looking back historically, the fine degree between, like, say, a double A minus to a double A, it looks like on the long haul it's anywhere, it's about 11 basis points. So that seems like a lot, little, it's 0.11%, so it's not even 1%. So really where it adds up is you have to sort of say, well, how much do we issue in a year? And so we issue general fund and COP sort of stuff, $400 or $500 million. So you take that and you say, okay, we keep doing that for 20 years. And it works out to be a little under $10 million a year, perhaps, in savings. The other part that could be part of the savings would be school districts and other jurisdictions that kind of rely on state revenues. And that's much more difficult for me to evaluate, but there's got to be some sort of an echo effect. They issue a lot of debt. And so when we sort of take a snapshot of local government debt and use a really conservative assumption, let's just say one and a half basis points, just because you don't really know, it's almost equal to what the state could save. Again, it's dispersed between a lot of jurisdictions, but if it was really more the school districts, which really do benefit from a state bond guarantee for their bonds if they choose it, it could add up to a fairly significant amount of money over time.
Thank you.
Other questions? Oh, Representative Berger, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Pursue just a minute, Rendell. You got there, but you went fast, and I wasn't. My question is about the...
we will slow them down.
Yeah. The pension obligation bonds.
Sure.
Okay, what I heard you say, and I guess I'd like it, is that the rating agencies don't think they're all that great, but they are great in terms of what they do for us, and so it's a net positive. Was that what you said?
I don't think the rating, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I don't think the rating agencies see them as a negative. I mean, when we first started talking to them about selling them, they were pretty agnostic whether or not that would hurt or help your credit. I mean, they were just... But as states started to sell more of them after us, I mean, there were other states that had done this, but we were kind of in that early pack. They started to pay more attention. And so some agencies put it in your debt load, if you will. Others don't. And the reason is you have to pay your pension... agencies have to pay that cost anyway. And all you do by selling a bond tied to that is you're obligating the state for, in this case, I think it was 24 years to pay that off. We got some rate just around 6%, roughly. The obligation to the pension system was 8%. The historic rates of return in the pension fund long-term had been closer to 12%. So you could kind of see it was a pretty good bet long-term that we would at least meet the cost of the bonds, and in fact, we believe we could do that, and we've looked really good because the first couple years afterwards, we've had 12, 14, 15, 16% returns. So I mean, it's been a really good play. So they're not holding that against us. I guess I know when you see the chart, you see this big bump. I would take that off the table and look at just the other obligations we have, and that's really where we should be focused as far as is this good or bad for the state.
Mr. Chair, one comment. I don't like hear the state treasurer talking about it being a good play. That's a little close to
it. It was a prudent investment.
Thank you.
That's a new language, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Treasurer.
Yeah. We were just talking about lottery and playing.
Other questions? I have several, but I'll wait until other people have finished. Go ahead, Representative Butler.
And I do have several, too, but I more observations, again, than true questions. Again, coming back to the weaknesses, this growing debt burden shows up as a weakness. And, of course, Oregon has a lot of certificates of participation outstanding, as well as the appropriation credits and direct revenues. Do other states use those as much as we have in Oregon? And again, that came about Measure 11 delivered a great deal of the COPs to us.
Through the chair, Representative Butler, I'd say that a lot of states have a lot of different kinds of debt, and you have to look at the state constitution. Many states can just issue general obligation bonds. They don't have to get voter approval, or they do, or the legislature sets a limit.
our constitution has led us down the path of using this particular technique. Generally, the credit rating on a certificate of participation, it's at least financing, it's not full faith and credit, is at least one full rating level lower than our general obligation bonds. So we pay a small, I'd say about 20 basis point penalty, and we usually buy bond insurance to overcome that because we have a slightly lower rating. But again, it's really driven, that's why you have to look at this net tax supported debt per capita, because it kind of levels the playing field. It's all the GOs and the ODOT bonds. You know, everybody does it different. Some people sell general obligation bonds for roads. It's just there's just no standard way to look at it. But I will say that our choice of using COPs, and we do have a lot, I don't disagree, has probably been is the way we get around our constitution to accomplish the things we need to purchase that we absolutely need, hopefully.
And to follow up relative to this whole process, if I may, and this gets a little convoluted, but I need to ask the question. Oregon's constitution requires that our budget be balanced, and that we meet biannually to balance that budget. And before we leave, irrespective of what may happen in 2008, we'll have a balanced budget when we leave here. We've had, again, the easy access to the ballot. The spending limitation as a constitutional initiative that folks wanted to stick on. Many states have spending limitations that are imposed on them other than statutory limitations. Many of them actually have gone to some kind of a spending limitation. Oregon, while we have a constitutionally balanced budget and we have a statutory spending limit, we have a constitutional revenue collection limitation, the kicker, in effect. The workings of the of all of those states that don't have revenue limitations but do have spending limitations, how do you see those play out? Believe me, please, Mr. Treasurer, Laura, this is not to try and get any spin on spending limitations or anything like that, but how do you see playing out the fact that Oregon does have a revenue collection limitation that basically folks are holding that against us, while other states have equally onerous items in their constitutions, which are the spending limitations?
Through the chair, Representative Butler, I think you noticed on the top left was those strong financial controls. That's what I meant, because our vice is our virtue. Okay.
Okay.
So that was why it was the top up there, because those financial controls include budget controls. All the things you've mentioned sort of create, whether directly or indirectly, a budget mechanism to kind of manage costs. It's just the reserves that they see, which is what the Treasurer suggested at 5%. We asked them at a recent conference, well, what do you think? And they said, well, if you have a bigger problem than 5%, your reserves aren't going to get you there. So they like our controls. They like that the legislature comes in and balances the budget and all of those things. But they want you to have a cushion because you have the cyclical revenue sources. And so they want it they want the same thing that I think everybody in Oregon wants, is some stability. That's good for investors. It's good for the citizens. So that's kind of why I position those things on each of the top corners.
If I might just add that, again, we're only looking and focused here on the rating agencies, although you can take these strengths and weaknesses and we could all sit here and debate kind of the long, big picture of the state. I mean, it applies to everything we do. But and I always say these are people who look at Oregon for a specific purpose, but many of the weaknesses we would recognize are some of the challenges we've always faced. A volatile tax system, it's been around for a long time, very volatile. Although, I also want to put in perspective, that downturn that we saw 3 years ago and that we all went through was unique. I mean, the scope, not only for Oregon, but for this country, it was one of the deepest recessions since the Great Depression. So remember that it was maybe an outlier. I don't know, Paul, maybe Paul's modeled this, but it was the worst. And so that is one of the challenges, is what's the future going to look like? And I would say the rating agencies want flexibility. They want you, the governor, to have the ability to run the government in a flexible way. So we have the initiative system. They see that as an outlier. That's another group of people making law that don't necessarily always have the have to balance the budget piece, right? So that's a concern. Anything that puts constraints on your ability to run this government, and they're not going to tell you what to do with the money or how to do it, but they're concerned about, again, the factors that would start to make it harder for you to make decisions to run the government. So hence, when they saw that spending cap, they did not like that because they saw of the other factors in the state, and it really hamstrung, would have hamstrung the state, just like they saw Colorado be hamstrung by a spending limit.
Thank you. Other questions? I have a couple that I think are related to this, and one of them it gets back to the issue that of the example you were using of the pension situation. And I think we're all pretty familiar with the fact that we had a formulaic a system that simply wasn't working anymore, and our reserves were not adequate to fund the pensions that we discovered that we were having to pay as a result of the quirks in the way our state law worked. Then, of course, through some pretty difficult changes that were difficult to come by but very, very important, we think we reduced our long-term problem. But then, of course, we were left with a short-term problem, and that is that the built-up pension obligation as a result of those quirks. I think I'm summarizing this reasonably well. And that was what we went out with that very large bond to finance. Now, I want to ask you a couple questions about the way in which that benefits the general fund, if it does. It occurs to me that the first question, I guess, is how are those debts, how is that bond repaid? Where does the money come from to pay that bond?
You want to answer?
Representative Bernhardt, I don't know every piece of the budget, but when we do our debt capacity analysis, I'm sure they allocate debt service DAS does out to all the different state agencies. We assume 38% of it's paid by the general fund, which would lead you to believe that all those other state agencies that have federal funds or ODOT, it's being allocated out to everybody on payroll. So pension obligation debt service was just like paying PERS. You know, it was built into payroll. So it's a question of whether you pay X or you pay Y. And at X, we were having an accrued liability that was growing at 8% a year. By selling the bonds, I believe it was 5.76%. May not be around the last decimal, but we were able to lower that cost. You still have the principal amount, but the interest that was accruing on the liability dropped by over 200 basis points, which is huge. On top of that, we flooded PERS with all this cash. And as the treasurer has mentioned, they have additional cash in their banks, and they're earning much higher than the 8% they have to earn. They were earning 10 and 12 and 14%. So in the long run, your future liabilities are going to be lower, again, if you have a couple bad years in the stock market, because we're earning above what we actuarially needed to earn just to keep the system level on a going-forward basis.
So if I might, Mr. Chair, I think Paul Cleary came up with this calculation that for this biennium, that difference, if you will, the cost and the savings because of the pension obligation for this biennium is something like $130 million. So it's meaningful to
through the bottom line of the state.
Exactly.
We talk about the savings.
Per year.
Per year.
Right. That's a great arbitrage.
Well, that in this case is the biennium. Biennium. For the 2 years.
Yeah, $65 million, right. Rough number. Okay. Does that trigger any other questions? Okay. A couple of other issues. We go out and we borrow money to build bridges, highways, university buildings, a variety of other things. Does it matter to rating agencies what we use the money for, what we spend it on?
If we were building football stadiums, they probably wouldn't look at it in the same light as they look at we're investing in our own self. We promote that in our marketing to them, that we have a capital planning process and the state works to try and make sure that the highest priority capital needs are what we're funding. Just similar to, living within your means. The fact that we try and focus our investments is considered a positive. I mean, we heard that this morning once we told them again about the community college and the sort of the vetting process of even which community colleges and what it was for and what they had to use it for and the match. And I think that's a very positive thing.
Just to be clear, too, when you're selling these bonds, many of which will have an economic benefit to the state, which again goes back to one of the strengths. You want to constantly look at doing things that can help reinvest into your state to help the economy. Could be higher education, could be infrastructure, other things like that. Just a sidebar, there are rules about what you can sell, though. You can't just sell it and then go down to Nevada and do something with the proceeds. I mean, there are rules to sell that
for
tax purposes. So I'll just say, to do that arbitrage or that difference on the pension obligation, it was a taxable transaction. It was a different type of a bond, and hence we were in a different kind of marketplace. And in that case, we did put it in the pension fund, and which is something we hadn't done in the past. We've almost always sold bonds to build something. But again, the numbers pointed that this was a very good investment.
Useful thing to do. So the fact that we do this analysis and that we believe that these activities will actually improve the economy, that is something that gets considered as along with a whole bunch of other things, sure, in their rating decisions.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I recall it when we were working on the transportation bonds, it became immediately obvious that we would reduce transportation costs for many, many businesses and individuals by making certain that we had bridges that could handle heavy loads, for example. That's directly related into the bond rating for the bonds that we have to sell in order to make that happen.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? Other issues and concerns? It looks like the committee's going to escape early today. Paul and I have been working them pretty hard, so they'll used to be glad to have a little time.
Great.
We appreciate very much your coming, Treasurer Edwards, and presenting to us today on these issues. We hope that we can call on you either individually or as a committee again as we work on our issues that we have to address this time. One of the things that we're hoping to do in this committee is be considered more not just the committee on revenue, but also the committee on dealing with fiscal issues for the state of Oregon. Just as you're responsible as the fiscal officer for the state, we are trying to expand our work in that area because it seems to us that revenue and fiscal and the handling of that money, the way in which you deal with fiscal issues, are intimately related. We appreciate your presentation.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Representative Butler.
Thank you. I just wanted to offer again my thanks to the Treasurer for coming today. The state of Oregon, and particularly with Treasurer Edwards, enjoys an international reputation for the great management of the state and our overall investments as well as the debt. And the Treasurer has a unique ability to surround himself with really very high caliber, wonderful staff. And it's a great pleasure to be. You may not agree with everything that goes on in the state, but I think the Treasurer's office is a place that all Oregonians can take a great deal of pride.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler, for reminding us of that fact. One of the areas that we're not paying much attention to, or we're not concerned about because we know that you're on top of it, is the whole area. It's a whole area having to do with our investments.
Thank you.
And handling our investments well. We depend on you to do that job well, and you have done it well. And that we expect that to continue to happen. And what it means, of course, is, as you pointed out in dealing with the pension obligation situation, it inures greatly to the benefit of the state. You've more than paid your salary. Thank you very much.
I will comment on that.
On that note, we are adjourned.
Thank you.